Thank you so much to Julia Gaskill, Sarah Gehring, and Jamie J. Mortara. I am Camille Perry. This has been Talking Earth on KBOOT.FM.
Thank you, Camille.
I hope you guys all have a wonderful night. Listeners, Talking Earth will be back next week at 10 p.m.
Talking Earth is not on next week.
We're not. Lies.
It's second and third.
Second and third. I lied.
So next time.
Terrible lying.
Second Monday next month.
Second Monday of next month.
Be Will
I
Curtis.
Will be back.
Voice of God looking out for us.
Alright.
Thanks God.
Thanks God. Once again, I've been Camille Perry. That was Patrick Bocard, and we'll see you next time.
Woo! Woo!
This is KBOO Portland, community radio for the Pacific Northwest. Stay tuned at midnight for Joe Woods and the Tiki Cha-Cha Club. Right now, it's the bedtime radio show for grown-ups, Gremlin Time.
Good evening and welcome to Gremlin Time. This is Fortunato. Tonight we present another story by Damon Runyon and read to us by Naples Yellow. Tonight's story is once again set in that sort of mythical 1920s Prohibition era in Manhattan, especially around Times Square. So listen now to Romance in the Roaring Forties by Damon Runyon.
Only a rank sucker will think of taking two peeks at Dave the Dude's doll, because while Dave may stand for the first peek, figuring it is a mistake, it is a sure thing he will get sawed up at the second peek, and Dave the Dude is certainly not a man to have sawed up at you. But this Waldo Winchester is 100% sucker, which is why he takes quite a number of peeks at Dave's doll. And what is more, she takes quite a number of peeks right back at him. And there you are. When a guy and a doll get to taking peeks back and forth at each other, why, there you are indeed. This Waldo Winchester is a nice-looking young guy who writes pieces about Broadway for the Morning Item. He writes about the goings-on in nightclubs, such as fights, and one thing and another, and also about who is running around with who, including guys and dolls. Sometimes this is very embarrassing to people who may be married and are running around with people who are not married. But of course, Waldo Winchester cannot be expected to ask one and all for their marriage certificates before he writes his pieces for the paper. The chances are, if Waldo Winchester knows Miss Billy Perry is Dave the Dude's doll, he will never take more than his first peek at her. But nobody tips him off until his second or third peek, and by this time, Miss Billy Perry is taking her peeks back at him, and Waldo Winchester is hooked. In fact, he is plumb gone, and being a sucker, like I tell you, he does not care whose doll she is. Poisonally, I do not blame him much, for Miss Billy Perry is worth a few peeks, especially when she is out on the floor of Miss Missouri Martin's 1600 Club doing her tap dance. Still, I do not think the best tap dancer that ever lives can make me take two peeks at her if I know she is Dave the Dude's doll. For Dave somehow thinks more than somewhat of his dolls. He especially thinks plenty of Miss Billy Perry, and sends her fur coats, and diamond rings, and one thing and another, which she sends back to him at once because it seems she does not take presents from guys. This is considered most surprising all along Broadway, but people figure the chances are she has some other angle. Anyway, this does not keep Dave the Dude from liking her just the same, and so she is considered his doll by one and all, and is respected accordingly until this Waldo Winchester comes along. It happens that he comes along while Dave the Dude is off in the Modoc on a little run down to the Bahamas to get some goods for his business, such as scotch and champagne. And by the time Dave gets back, Miss Billy Perry and Waldo Winchester are at the stage where they sit in corners between her numbers and hold hands. Of course, nobody tells Dave the Dude about this, because they do not wish to get him excited. Not even Miss Missouri Martin tells him, which is most unusual because Miss Missouri Martin, who is sometimes called Mizu for short, tells everything she knows as soon as she knows it, which is very often before it happens. You see, the idea is when Dave the Dude is excited, he may blow somebody's brains out, and the chances are it will be nobody's brains but Waldo Winchester's, although some claim that Waldo Winchester has no brains, or he will not be hanging around Dave the Dude's doll. I know Dave is very, very fond of Miss Billy Perry because I hear him talk to her several times, and he is most polite to her and never gets out of line in a company by using cuss words or anything like this. Furthermore, one night when One-Eyed Sally Abrahams is a little stewed up, he refers to Miss Billy Perry as a broad, meaning no harm whatever, for this is the way many of the boys speak of the dolls. But right away, Dave the Dude reaches across the table and bops One-Eyed Sally right in the mouth. So everybody knows from then on that Dave thinks well of Miss Billy Perry. Of course, Dave is always thinking fairly well of some doll as far as this goes, but it is seldom he gets the bopping guys in the mouth over them. Well, one night, what happens but Dave the Dude walks into the 1600 Club, and there in the entrance, what does he see but this Waldo Winchester and Miss Billy Perry kissing each other back and forth friendly. Right away, Dave reaches for the old equalizer to shoot Waldo Winchester. But it seems Dave does not happen to have the old equalizer with him, not expecting to have to shoot anybody this particular evening. So Dave the Dude walks over, and as Waldo Winchester hears him coming and lets go his stranglehold on Miss Billy Perry, Dave nails him with a big right hand on the chin. I will say for Dave the Dude that he is a fair puncher with his right hand, although his left is not so good, and he knocks Waldo Winchester bow-legged. In fact, Waldo folds right up on the floor. Well, Miss Billy Perry lets out a screech you can hear clear to the Battery and runs over to where Waldo Winchester lights and falls on top of him squalling very loud. All anybody can make out of what she says is that Dave the Dude is a big bum, although Dave is not so big at that, and that she loves Waldo Winchester. Dave walks over and starts to give Waldo Winchester the leather, which is considered customary in such cases. But he seems to change his mind, and instead of booting Waldo around, Dave turns and walks out of the joint looking very black and mad. And the next anybody hears of him, he's over in the Chicken Club doing plenty of drinking. This is regarded as a very bad sign indeed, because while everybody goes to the Chicken Club now and then to give Tony Bertazzola, the owner, a friendly play, very few people care to do any drinking there because Tony's liquor is not meant for anybody to drink except the customers. Well, Miss Billy Perry gets Waldo Winchester on his pegs again and wipes his chin off with her handkerchief. And by, he is all okay except up for a big lump on his chin. And all the time, she is telling Waldo Winchester what a big bum Dave the Dude is, although afterwards, Miss Missouri Martin gets hold of Miss Billy Perry and puts the blast on her plenty for chasing a two-handed spender such as Dave the Dude out of the joint. "You are nothing but a little sap," Miss Missouri Martin tells Miss Billy Perry. "You cannot get the right time off of this newspaper guy. Well, everybody knows Dave the Dude is a very fast man with a dollar." "But I love Mr. Winchester," says Miss Billy Perry. "He's so romantic. He is not a bootlegger and a gunman like Dave the Dude. He puts lovely pieces in the paper about me, and he's a gentleman at all times." Now, of course, Miss Missouri Martin is not in a position to argue about gentlemen, because she meets very few in the 1600 Club, and anyway, she does not wish to make Waldo Winchester mad, as he is apt to turn around and put pieces in his paper that will be a knock to the joint. So she lets the matter drop. Miss Billy Perry and Waldo Winchester go on holding hands between her numbers and maybe kissing each other now and then, as young people are liable to do, and Dave the Dude plays the chill for the 1600 Club, and everything seems to be all right. Naturally, we are all very glad there is no more trouble over the proposition, because the best Dave can get is the worst of it in a jam with a newspaper guy. Personally, I figure Dave will soon find himself another doll and forget all about Miss Billy Perry, because now that I take another peek at her, I can see where she is just about the same as any other tap dancer, except that she is redheaded. Tap dancers are generally blackheads, but I do not know why. Moosh, the doorman at the 1600 Club, tells me Miss Missouri Martin keeps plugging for Dave the Dude with Miss Billy Perry in a quiet way, because he says he hears Miss Missouri Martin make the following crack one night to her. "Well, I did not see any Simple Simon on your leaning linger." This is Miss Missouri Martin's way of saying she sees no diamond on Miss Billy Perry's finger, for Miss Missouri Martin is an old, experienced doll who figures if a guy loves a doll, he will prove it with diamonds. Miss Missouri Martin has many diamonds herself, though how any guy can ever get himself heated up enough about Miss Missouri Martin to give her diamonds is more than I can see. I am not a guy who goes around much, so I did not see Dave the Dude for a couple of weeks. But late one Sunday afternoon, little Johnny McGowan, who is one of Dave's men, comes and says to me like this.
"What do you think? Dave grabs the scribe a little while ago and is taking him out for an airing."
Johnny is so excited it is some time before I can get him cooled out enough to explain. It seems that Dave the Dude gets his biggest car out of the garage and sends his driver, Wop Joe, over to the item office where Waldo Winchester works, with a message that Miss Billy Perry wishes to see Waldo right away at Miss Missouri Martin's apartment on 59th Street. Of course, this message is nothing but the phonus bolonus, but Waldo drops in for it and gets in the car. Then Wop Joe drives him up to Miss Missouri Martin's apartment, and who gets in the car there but Dave the Dude? And away they go. Now, this is very bad news indeed, because when Dave the Dude takes a guy out for an airing, the guy very often does not come back. What happens to him, I never ask, because the best a guy can get by asking questions in this man's town is a bust in the nose. But I am much worried over this proposition, because I like Dave the Dude, and I know that taking a newspaper guy like Waldo Winchester out for an airing is apt to cause talk, especially if he does not come back. The other guys that Dave the Dude takes out for airings do not mean much in particular, but here is a guy who may produce trouble, even if he is a sucker, on account of being connected with a newspaper. I know enough about newspapers to know that by and by the editor or somebody will be around wishing to know where Waldo Winchester's pieces about Broadway are, and if there are no pieces from Waldo Winchester, the editor will wish to know why. Finally, it will get around to where other people will wish to know, and after a while, many people will be running around saying, "Where is Waldo Winchester?" And if enough people in this town get to running around saying, "Where is so-and-so?" it becomes a great mystery, and the newspapers hop on the cops, and the cops hop on everybody, and by and by there is so much heat in town that it is no place for a guy to be. But what is to be done about this situation, I do not know. Personally, it strikes me as very bad indeed, and while Johnny goes away to do a little telephoning, I am trying to think up some place to go where people will see me and remember afterwards that I am there in case it is necessary for them to remember. Finally, Johnny comes back very excited and says,
"Hey, the dude is up at the Woodcock Inn on the Pelham Parkway, and he is sending out the word to one and all to come at once. Good time Charlie Bernstein just gets the wire and tells me, something is doing. The rest of the mob are on their way, so let us be moving."
But here is an invitation which does not strike me as a good thing at all. The way I look at it, Dave the Dude is no company for a guy like me at this time. The chances are he either does something to Waldo Winchester already, or is getting ready to do something to him which I wish no part of. Personally, I have nothing against newspaper guys, not even the ones who write pieces about Broadway. If Dave the Dude wishes to do something to Waldo Winchester, all right, but what is the sense of bringing outsiders into it? But the next thing I know, I am in Johnny McGowan's Roadster, and he is zipping along very fast indeed, paying practically no attention to traffic lights or anything else. As we go busting out the concourse, I get to thinking the situation over, and I figure that Dave the Dude probably keeps thinking about Miss Billy Perry and drinking liquor such as they sell in the Chicken Club until finally he blows his topper. The way I look at it, only a guy who is off his nut will think of taking a newspaper guy out for an airing over a doll, when dolls are a dime a dozen in this man's town. Still, I remember reading in the papers about a lot of different guys who are considered very sensible until they get tangled up with a doll and maybe loving her, and the first thing anybody knows, they hop out of windows or shoot themselves or somebody else, and I can see where even a guy like Dave the Dude may go daffy over a doll. I can see that little Johnny McGowan is worried too, but he does not say much, and we pull up in front of the Woodcock Inn in no time whatever to find a lot of other cars ahead of us, some of which I recognize as belonging to different parties. The Woodcock Inn is what is called a roadhouse, and it is run by Big Nig Skulski, a very nice man indeed, and a friend of everybody's. It stands back a piece off the Pelham Parkway and is a very pleasant place to go to, what with Nig having a good band and a floor show with a lot of fair-looking dolls and everything else a man can wish for a good time. He gets a nice play from nice people, although Nig's liquor is nothing extra. Personally, I never go there much because I do not care for roadhouses, but it is a great spot for Dave the Dude when he is pitching parties or even when he is only drinking single-handed. There is a lot of racket in the joint as we drive up, and who should come out to meet us but Dave the Dude himself with a big hello. His face is very red and he seems heated up no little, but he does not look like a guy who is meaning any harm to anybody, especially a newspaper guy.
"Come in, guys," Dave the Dude yells. "Come right in."
So we go in, and the place is full of people sitting at tables or out on the floor dancing, and I see Miss Missouri Martin with all her diamonds hanging from her in different places, and Good Time Charlie Bernstein, and Feet Samuels, and Tony Bertazzola, and Skeets Bolivar, and Nick the Greek, and Rochester Red, and a lot of other guys and dolls from around and about. In fact, It looks as if everybody from all the joints in Broadway are present, including Miss Billy Perry, who is all dressed up in white and is lugging a big bundle of orchids and so forth, and who is giggling and smiling and shaking hands and going on generally. And finally, I see Waldo Winchester, the scribe, sitting at a ringside table all by himself, but there is nothing wrong with him as far as I can see. I mean, he seems to be all in one piece so far. Dave, I say to Dave the Dude, very quiet, what is coming off here? You know a guy cannot be too careful what he does around this town, and I will hate to see you tangled up in anything right now.
Why, Dave says, what are you talking about? Nothing is coming off here but a wedding, and it is going to be the best wedding anybody on Broadway ever sees. We are waiting for the preacher now.
You mean somebody is going to be married? I ask, being somewhat confused.
Certainly, Dave the Dude says. What do you think? What's the idea of a wedding anyway?
Who is going to be married? I ask.
Nobody but Billy and the Scribe, Dave says. This is the greatest thing I ever do in my life. I run into Billy the other night, and she is crying her eyes out because she loves this scribe and wishes to marry him, but it seems the scribe has nothing he can use for money. So I tell Billy to leave it to me, because you know I love her myself so much I wish to see her happy at all times, even if she has to marry to be that way. So I frame this wedding party, and after they are married, I am going to stake them to a few G's so they can get a good running start, Dave says. But I do not tell the scribe, and I do not let Billy tell him, as I wish it to be a big surprise to him. I kidnap him this afternoon and bring him out here, and he is scared half to death, thinking I'm going to scrag him. In fact, Dave says, I never see a guy so scared. He is still so scared, nothing seems to cheer him up. Go over and tell him to shake himself together, because nothing but happiness for him is coming off here.
Well, I wish to say I am greatly relieved to think that Dave intends doing nothing worse to Waldo Winchester than getting him married up. So I go over to where Waldo is sitting. He certainly looks somewhat alarmed. He is all in a huddle with himself, and he has what you call a vacant stare in his eyes. I can see that he is indeed frightened. So I give him a jolly slap on the back, and I say,
congratulations, pal. Cheer up. The worst is yet to come.
You bet it is,
Waldo Winchester says, his voice so solemn I am greatly surprised. You are a fine-looking bridegroom, I say. You look as if you were at a funeral instead of a wedding. Why not laugh, ha-ha, and maybe take a dram or two and go to cutting up some?
Mister, says Waldo Winchester, my wife is not going to care for me getting married to Miss Billy Perry.
Your wife? I say, much astonished.
What is this you are speaking of? How can you have any wife except Miss Billy Perry? This is great foolishness.
I know, Waldo says, very sad.
I know, but I got a wife just the same, and she is going to be very nervous when she hears about this. My wife is very strict with me. My wife does not allow me to go around marrying people. My wife is Lola Sepola of the Rolling Sepolas, the Acrobats, and I am married to her for 5 years. She is the strong lady who juggles the other four people in the act. My wife just gets back from a year's tour of the interstate time, and she is at the Marks Hotel right this minute. I am upset by this proposition.
Does Miss Billy Perry know about this wife? I ask.
No, he says. No. She thinks I am single-o.
But why do you not tell Dave the Dude you were already married when he brings you out here to marry you off to Miss Billy Perry? I ask.
It seems to me a newspaper guy must know it is against the law for a guy to marry several dolls, unless he is a tyke or some such.
Well, Waldo says,
if I tell Dave the Dude I am married after taking his doll away from him, I am quite sure Dave will be very much excited and maybe do something harmful to my health.
Now, there is much in what the guy says, to be sure. I am inclined to think myself that Dave will be somewhat disturbed when he hears of this situation, especially when Miss Billy Perry starts in being unhappy about it. But what is to be done, I do not know, except maybe to let the wedding go on, and then when Waldo is out of reach of Dave, to put in a claim that he is insane and that the marriage does not count. It is a sure thing I do not wish to be around when Dave the Dude hears Waldo is already married. I am thinking that maybe I better take it on the lamb out of there when there was a great row at the door, and I hear Dave the Dude yelling that the preacher arrives. He is a very nice-looking preacher at that, though he seems somewhat surprised by the goings-on, especially when Miss Missouri Martin steps up and takes charge of him. Miss Missouri Martin tells me she is fond of preachers and is quite used to them because she is twice married by preachers and twice by justices of the peace and once by a ship's captain at sea. By this time, one and all present, except maybe myself and Waldo Winchester and the preacher and maybe Miss Billy Perry, are somewhat corned. Waldo is still sitting at his table looking very sad and saying yes and no to Miss Billy Perry whenever she skips past him, for Miss Billy Perry is too much pleasured up with happiness to stay long in one spot. Dave the Dude is more corned than anybody else because he has 2 or 3 days running start on everybody. And when Dave the Dude is corned, I wish to say that he is a very unreliable guy as to temper, and he is apt to explode right in your face any minute. But he seems to be getting a great bang out of the doings. Well, by and by, Nick Skolsky has the dance floor cleared, and then he moves out on the floor a sort of arch of very beautiful flowers. The idea seems to be that Miss Billy Perry and Waldo Winchester are to be married under this arch. I can see Dave the Dude must put in several days planning this whole proposition, and it must cost him plenty of the old do-re-mi, especially as I see him showing Miss Missouri Martin a diamond ring as big as a cough drop.
It is for the bride, Dave Dude says. The poor Lugan she is marrying will never have enough dough to buy her such a rock, and she always wishes a big one. I get it off a guy who brings it in from Los Angeles. I'm going to give the bride away myself in person. So how do I act, Mizzou? I want Billy to have everything according to the book.
Well, while Miss Missouri Martin is trying to remember back to one of her weddings to tell him, I take another peek at Waldo Winchester to see how he is making out. I once see two guys go to the old warm squatterview up in Sing Sing, and I wish to say both are laughing heartily compared to Waldo Winchester at this moment. Miss Billy Perry is sitting with him, and the orchestra leader is calling his men 30 names because none of them can think of how Oh Promise Me goes, when Dave the Dude yells,
"Well, we are all set. Let the happy couple step forward."
Miss Billy Perry bounces up and grabs Waldo Winchester by the arm and pulls him out of his chair. After a peek at his face, I am willing to lay 6-5, he does not make the arch. But he finally gets there with everybody laughing and clapping their hands, and the preacher comes forward, and Dave the Dude looks happier than I ever see him look before in his life as they all get together under the arch of flowers. Well, all of a sudden, there is a terrible racket at the front door of the Woodcock Inn, with some doll doing a lot of hollering in a deep voice that sounds like a man's. And naturally, everybody turns and looks that way. The doorman, a guy by the name of Slugsy Sachs, who is a very hard man indeed, seems to be trying to keep somebody out, but pretty soon there is a heavy bump, and Slugsy Sachs falls down, and in comes a doll about 4 feet high and 5 feet wide. In fact, I never see such a wide doll. She looks all hammered down. Her face is almost as wide as her shoulders and makes me think of a great big full moon. She comes in bounding like, and I can see that she is all churned up about something. As she bounces in, I hear a gurgle, and I look around to see Waldo Winchester slumping down to the floor, almost dragging Miss Billy Perry with him. Well, the wide doll walks right up to the bunch under the arch and says in a large bass voice,
"Which one is Dave the Dude?"
"I am Dave the Dude," says Dave the Dude, stepping up. "What do you mean by busting in here like a walrus and gumming up our wedding?"
"So you are the guy who kidnaps my ever-loving husband to marry him off to this little red-headed pancake here, are you?"
the wide doll says, looking at Dave the Dude, but pointing at Miss Billy Perry.
Well, now, calling Miss Billy Perry a pancake to Dave the Dude is a very serious proposition. And Dave the Dude gets very angry.
He is usually rather polite to dolls, but you can see he does not care for the wide doll's manner whatever.
"Say, listen here," Dave the Dude says. "You better take a walk before somebody clips you. You must be drunk," he says. "Or daffy," he says. "What are you talking about anyway?"
"You will see what I am talking about," the wide doll yells. "The guy on the floor there is my lawful husband. You probably frightened him to death, the poor dear. You kidnap him to marry this red-headed thing, and I am going to get you arrested as sure as my name is Lola Sapola, you simple-looking tramp."
Naturally, everybody is greatly horrified at a doll using such language to Dave the Dude, because Dave is known to shoot guys for much less. But instead of doing something to the wide doll at once, Dave says,
"What is this talk I hear? Who is married to who? Get out of here,"
Dave says, grabbing the wide doll's arm. Well, she makes out as if she is going to slap Dave in the face with the left hand, and Dave naturally pulls his kisser out of the way. But instead of doing anything with the left, Lola Sapola suddenly drives her right fist smack dab into Dave the Dude's stomach, which naturally comes forward as his face goes back. I wish to say I see many a body punch delivered in my life, but I never see a prettier one than this. What is more, Lola Cipolla steps in with the punch, so there is plenty on it. Now, a guy who eats and drinks like Dave the Dude does cannot take them so good in the stomach. So Dave goes, oof, and sits down very hard on the dance floor. And as he is sitting there, he is fumbling in his pants pockets for the old equalizer. So everybody around tears for cover except Lola Cipolla and Miss Billy Perry and Waldo Winchester. But before he can get his pistol out, Lola Cipolla reaches down and grabs Dave by the collar and hoists him to his feet. She lets go her hold on him, leaving Dave standing on his pins but teetering around somewhat, and then she drives her right hand at Dave's stomach a second time. The punch drops Dave again, and Lola steps up to him as if she is going to give him the foot. But she only gathers up Waldo Winchester from off the floor and slings him across her shoulder like he is a sack of oats and starts for the door. Dave the Dude sits up on the floor again, and by this time he has the old equalizer in his duke. "Only for me being a gentleman, I will fill you full of slugs," he yells. Lola Cipolla never even looks back, because by this time she is petting Waldo Winchester's head and calling him loving names and saying what a shame it is for bad characters like Dave the Dude to be abusing her precious one. It all sounds to me as if Lola Cipolla thinks well of Waldo Winchester. Well, after she gets out of sight, Dave the Dude gets up off the floor and stands there looking at Miss Billy Perry, who is out to break all crying records. The rest of us come out from undercover, including the preacher, and we are wondering how mad Dave the Dude is going to be about the wedding being ruined. But Dave the Dude only seems disappointed and sad. "Billy," he says to Miss Billy Perry, "I am mighty sorry you did not get your wedding. All I wish is for your happiness, but I do not believe you can ever be happy with this scribe if he also has to have his lion tamer around. As Cupid, I am a total bust. This is the only nice thing I ever tried to do in my whole life, and it is too bad it does not come off. Maybe if you wait until he can drown her or something."
"Dave,"
says Miss Billy Perry, dropping so many tears that she seems finally to wash herself right into Dave the Dude's arms.
"I will never, never be happy with such a guy as Waldo Winchester. I can see now you are the only man for me."
"Well, well, well," Dave the Dude says, cheering right up. "Where is the preacher? Bring on the preacher and let us have our wedding anyway." "I see Mr. and Mrs. Dave the Dude the other day, and they seem very happy. But you can never tell about married people, so of course I am never going to let on to Dave the Dude that I am the one who telephones Lola Cipolla at the Marks Hotel, because maybe I did not do Dave any too much of a favor at that."
And there you have it. Our evening of romance goes on. Romance in the Roaring Forties, a short story by Damon Runyon. You know, a lot of his stories got changed into movies, especially in the early 30s when talkies came in. Little Miss Marker was one. Lady for a Day, I think. Galloping Bill or Gentleman Bill, something like that. It's about a horse race. And a few others. I'd imagine Dave the Dude would be, if it were done at Warner Brothers, they'd probably have Warren William as Dave the Dude. Maybe over at Paramount, they'd have Franchantone. And if it were done at MGM, they'd probably make it really classy and have William Powell as Dave the Dude. Probably Mae Clark or Ann Vorak as Billy Perry. And actually, I was just looking at the date on that disc. We recorded that like 11 years ago first. And I'm just sort of redoing a lot of our older programs that we've done. This is Fortunato. You're listening to Gremlin Time. It's the bedtime radio show for grown-ups. Still can't sleep? We got another story for you. We're going to stay in New York, but this time it's a show that like started off on the National Broadcasting Company, and then I think it moved to the American Broadcasting Company, finally ended up on the Columbia Broadcasting Company, and then later it went to television. And a co-star in it was a very young Mary Tyler Moore. And the screenwriter, or the writer of many of the episodes, is Blake Edwards, who'd later go on to do The Pink Panther, but he'd also do another Private Eye show called Peter Gunn. But this one had the pretty boy from all the Busby Berkeley musicals, Dick Powell. And after his success in Murder, My Sweet, which he made in the early 40s, he was sort of a nice tough guy character, and he translated to radio. where he became Richard Diamond. Now, these shows are from like the late 40s, early 50s, so a magnetic tape had come in. So instead of having to do the shows live a couple of times for the East Coast and the West Coast, they would do them live and then record them. And so that's what this is here. I've cut out all the cigarette commercials. And in this one, the cigarette company was recommending how you can tell how mild their cigarettes were. Just smoke their cigarettes for a month, and you'll notice how mild a cigarette can be. So we cut all of those out. So an abridged version of our Richard Diamond mystery here on Gremlin Time.
Here transcribed is Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell.
Diamond Detective Agency.
Diamond, that's a girl's best friend, you know.
Not this girl anymore.
Oh, Helen, hi.
Hi, you stinker.
Hmm?
Where were you all day yesterday?
Oh, well, you'll never guess what happened.
No.
9 o'clock City Hall. They told me I have to renew my license. Cost $200.
Go on, I'm listening, but I'm not sympathetic.
10 o'clock, my bank. Withdrew $2.35. The wad.
Well, big oaks from little acorns grow.
Exactly, that was the idea. So 11 o'clock, my brokers. Pawn, that is. Deposited typewriter, watch, ring. 1:30, Louis' barbershop.
A lie? You had a haircut 2 days ago?
And I was trimmed again. Louis' tip on the 7th should have been read backwards.
Rick, do you mean you still haven't renewed your license and you lost all the money you raised on your things?
Honey, not only that, I lost a lot of faith in Louis. What I need is a good client with $200, and I... Oh. This might be the one. She's wearing mink. And she's got nice black eyes.
Rick, I'll loan you $200. Tell her to take her eyes somewhere else.
Sorry, honey. The eyes have it. Bye. Well, may I help you?
Is your name Richard Diamond?
I'm thinking of changing it to Richard Zircon, but what can I do for you?
Will you work for me, please? Here. $300.
Lady, I'll die for you.
He was always so nice. Then this morning I met him at the house for coffee and told him what I found out.
Suppose you start from the beginning, and we'll see what we can do about him. Sit down.
I don't know how I could be so stupid. They were just using me. I've made a terrible mistake.
We all make mistakes.
I'm in desperate trouble, Mr. Diamond.
What's wrong with you? You're shivering.
Cab. All the way from Brooklyn, I felt... It hurts.
What is it? What? She fell into my arms, tearing at her stomach, as if she'd just swallowed hot lead. She was still trying to talk when I let her down to the floor and ran out for some water. When I came back 5 seconds later, she was unconscious. And in another 5 seconds, she was dead.
It ain't Richard Diamond, defective detective.
And your name, sonny?
Why, it's me, Otis, Sergeant Otis. You know me, Rick.
Oh, yes, yes, Sergeant Otis. I didn't recognize you there for a minute. You had an intelligent look on your face.
Oh, you think that's funny, don't you? Well, let me tell you something really funny.
Well, do.
Personnel division tells me if you don't get up $200 by midnight... you're gonna be an ex-private detective.
One of the reasons why I'm here, Otis, old buddy. Now, on your lunch hour, trot up to personnel and tell them about the color of this.
Ew. Where'd you get all the scratch?
For my client.
But she's dead.
Well, go ahead, say it. She's dead. But dead or alive, she hired me and paid me, and I'm still working for her. Here. You can take it upstairs and cover my license fee for me.
Oh, all right.
Now, try to smile through those tears. There you are. 200. All counted. You won't have to take off your shoes.
Okay, I'll take it up for you. About that dame, Diamond. You know, I gotta see her.
Otis, there's smoke coming out of your ears. I told you that would happen if you ever tried to think for yourself. Now, where's Levinson?
Lieutenant's across the hall in the medical examiner's office. I'll go get him.
Never mind. I'll do it myself. You might lose your way.
Oh, you talk like that.
Rick. Glad you dropped by.
Hi, Walt. What did you find out about the girl?
Medics just finished with her. It was xylitol killed her.
Xylitol? That's new to me.
It's a drug. Petrol base. Been in her stomach about an hour. Judging from the way she acted and talked, it could have been suicide.
What's her name?
Haven't made it yet.
Don't know who she is. You need some new talent around here, Walt.
Well, there's no identification. Prints haven't lined up with anything yet. Too bad, huh? Real nice-looking kid.
I agreed. She was a nice-looking kid. The kind you wait all year long to ask to the senior prom. Watching her die that morning hadn't been easy. It was like standing helpless in the middle of a sudden blizzard that wipes out the flowers of an early spring. When I got back to my office, I was still wondering who she was and how I could help her.
Hi, Ricky boy. I've been waiting for you.
Oh, hello, Bridgie. Isn't it a little late in the day to be cleaning up my office?
Oh, I finished swabbing it down a few minutes ago. I was just waiting to get...
Sorry, Bridgie. No canasta this afternoon. Don't feel like it.
Me neither. Gotta take my banjo lesson in half an hour. Waited around to give you this. Found this purse lying in your wastebasket. One of your girlies must have knocked it off the edge of your desk.
Give it to me, will you?
Maybe that one in the mink coat I seen come in this morning.
It was hers, all right. The faint, sweet odor of her perfume still clung to it. But it wasn't the lipstick, comb, small change, and key that made it so heavy. It was the .32 revolver inside, three bullets recently fired. A driver's license told me her name was Doris Romano, and it gave an address. Nobody was home. The lady next door dropped her mop long enough to wheeze out where Mr. Romano worked. I twisted my way down an iron stairway into a furnace room. Doris Romano's father was taking huge bites out of a coal pile with an outsized shovel. I told him his daughter was dead. He slammed the furnace door and threw down the shovel.
I knew someday I would hear this. You look like a nice young man. Like my two daughters once nice young ladies. They went away from me a long time ago and I'm left here. There was nothing I could do. There is nothing I can do. It's as if they never were. It's better that I go on shoveling until there is no more coal and I die too. I'm better dead.
I took Mr. Romano down to the coroner's office and he identified her body. Later, I told Walt about the purse and turned it over to him. Everything but the .32 and the key. Maybe it was the wrong way to play it, but somehow I felt I could still give Doris Romano the help she'd wanted. She said that she had taken a taxi from Brooklyn. So Diamond went to Brooklyn. I don't know how many cab stands there are in Brooklyn, but I can tell you where you can find 104 of them.
Sorry, bud, I got a fare.
Where, under the floorboards?
In there, eating.
I'm looking for information. Here.
Ah, gumboots, huh? Who's getting cheated?
Did you carry a brunette in a mink coat all the way to Manhattan sometime this morning?
Maybe.
Where'd you pick her up?
Brooklyn, house on M Street.
What house?
How's a little old expense account?
Well, here's a fin.
Oh, no.
That's all there is. Only one to a customer.
Okay, I'll tell you about the house, but I won't tell you about the guy.
What guy?
You sure only one to a customer?
Well, let's say we had a change in management. Okay, now tell me about the guy.
Tall, dark-haired, blue suit kind. He was sort of chasing her when she climbed into me cab. Looked like a mash.
With spring still 2 months away? Come on, take me to the house.
It's the gray one, 900 block. Find it yourself like I told you. I got a fare.
I found the house easy enough. There was a for sale sign on it. The door was locked, so I walked around and back and peeked in the kitchen window. Then I remembered I still had the key that had been in Doris's purse. It worked. Inside, the odor of tar or printer's ink or something along those lines hit me. I was just starting to sniff around when a tall blue suit eased himself in through the kitchen door. He looked at me like I was breathing some air that belonged to him.
You could use your GI loan. You ought to buy it. It's a real steal.
Oh, thanks. I'm just looking.
Well, we charge for that, too.
Oh. Well, I don't think she'd like it.
Your wife?
No. Just a girl in a mink coat. Name of Doris Romano.
Where'd you get the key to this house?
From her. It was in her will. She's dead.
I'll get my black suit pressed.
I met a cab driver who says he knows you. Said you've been doing a chase scene with Doris Romano early this morning.
Mister, when I chase a girl, I catch her.
I suppose you've got a name.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Joe Riley. I own this house, or if you're a buyer, okay. If not, cop a heel.
Well, I'm not a buyer.
Then blow.
Oh, I didn't know Lugers came that big.
Mm-hmm. And they make holes to match.
Yeah, I imagine so.
All right, Pilgrim, you got a name?
For me or you?
School isn't out yet. Just answer.
Well, there's Richard Diamond, private detective. She came to my office this morning.
What'd she have to say?
Nothing. She died of poisoning before she could say anything.
And the police?
They have her body and identification.
Well, goody for them. That all?
There's still you.
Any cop who wants me can find me listed in the book. I got a permit for this gun, and I haven't got a record. You see, Diamond, I could blow your head off for trespassing. But I'm a real nice guy, so just get out and forget you saw me.
Well, that won't be hard. Half an hour later, I picked up the evening paper, and the lead story stuck out like a white derby on an undertaker. It was about an unidentified man pulled out of the river that afternoon. The coroner had picked 3.32 slugs out of him.
What is it, Rick?
Well, about this guy they pulled out of the river. Anything on him?
Why?
No, just curiosity.
It's a terrible thing. Not just 3.32 slugs, but they'd been filed down the center.
Dum-dums?
Dum-dums. Tore the poor guy all apart. Everybody in the department's plenty sore. You want to see the body?
Some other time. I know what it would look like. As I left Walt's office, I felt like I was standing on a trap door and the warden had just smiled at the hangman. But I had to take Doris Romano's .32 out of my pocket and look at it. The three remaining bullets were all filed right down the center. Dum-dums. Everybody had a right to be sore, especially me. It was hard to picture my angel-faced client pumping dum-dum bullets into some guy and tossing him in the drink, but that's the way it looked. I had no choice but to turn the gun and bullets over to Lieutenant Walt Levinson for investigation. And the aftermath was something only a hurricane would understand. He acted like an historian who'd caught George Washington telling a lie.
Well, I guess this kind of proves who knows what who was talking about, doesn't it, Rick?
All right, so who's on first? Want me to tell you what's on second?
I don't want you to tell me anything because I know everything now.
You know, they could use you in some very high official circles.
Go ahead, make jokes.
I didn't know I had.
A man is found in the river with dum-dum bullets in him. She's carrying the gun that did it. Her fingerprints were on it. And then she commits suicide. Remorse.
Ah, baloney. Why did she come to my office to die? Why, when she didn't even know me, was I the last person on the earth she chose to see if she committed suicide?
Dames in love want to make a big show. Publicity. Go out with a 3-column spread.
Then why didn't she drop dead on the city desk of the Graphic? They'd have printed the story in real blood. Hers.
You were a lot closer than the Graphic.
Now, Walt, I'm going to explain this to you patiently.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen women of every kind. Hard, soft, sweet, warm, cheap, treacherous, mean. But I've never known a woman to lie in your arms dying, look up at you, with the most innocent black eyes in the world and ask you to help her after she had just come fresh from killing a man.
Psychology, I don't know. But evidence, I do.
If she went to all that trouble to get rid of the body, why didn't she get rid of the gun, too?
Well, I don't know.
Oh, Walt, this is the sweetest double-cross since the 3-way stretch. Somebody planted that gun on her. Now, if you can keep it out of the papers, somebody's going to wonder why the gun wasn't found and come looking for it. Will you give that theory a try?
And I suppose you'll be waiting for them with a butterfly net.
I'll be waiting for them with a picture of that girl's black eyes in the back of my head. What do you say?
Well...
Thanks, Walt. Personnel told me that the gun had been purchased by American Trust and Loan Company in 1941 and permitted to a bank messenger named Dale F. Bronson. The address was an apartment on 63rd Street. When I saw all the expensive cars out in front, I was thinking I should have been a bank messenger. When she answered the door, I knew it. Pure gold.
Well, hello. Tall, aren't you?
Oh, I do my best. Somehow I knew you'd belong to one of those cars out in front. Which one?
Longest low convertible. What can I do for you?
Oh, well, I'll rephrase the answer. I'd like to talk inside.
It's terribly early for me to receive strangers.
Oh, well, I sent my hourglass to the Sahara for a checkup. Besides, my watch is broken.
Come on in. I'll see if I can fix it. I'm great with the Swiss movement.
It shows. Are you Mrs. Bronson?
Yes, and my name's Kitty.
Kitty? Oh, nice. That's too bad I have to say this, but I'd like to see your husband. Preferably before he sees me and draws the right conclusion.
He's not here.
Expect him?
You're going to love this. No.
Where is he?
He's in a place where nothing matters anymore. Cemetery.
Sorry.
Don't be. He stuck his neck out and tried to be a hero one day. Somebody shot him and stole the money he was carrying.
You don't seem to miss him much.
I'm still wearing black.
Right color, Kitty, but wrong cut.
It's a new philosophy I've worked out.
I understand he worked for the American Trust and Loan. They bought him a gun.
Don't tell me you're here to talk about guns. Who sent you? Field and Stream?
Well, this is a sort of a collector's item. Recognize him?
No, should I?
It belonged to your husband.
You say it was my husband's? I suppose it was. I don't know for sure. We only stayed together a year. He had a lot of things.
After he was killed, what happened to those things?
I don't know. He moved in with his mother. She probably disposed of them.
I'd like to talk to his mother. Where could I find her?
This just isn't your night. She's in the cemetery. Next to him. Heart failure.
Well, I'll wash up, get my pay, and go home.
Just who are you?
Richard Diamond. You can call me Richard Diamond.
Detective?
Fridays.
Arrest me.
Mm-mm. Not until you commit a felony. This is only a misdemeanor.
You're a sergeant?
5-star general. Run my own outfit.
Come here.
Hmm.
My application for the auxiliary. Pass.
Fail. If we ever open a recreation center, I'll let you know. Outside, where things were milder, I lit up a Camel and tried to think of something smart. Then I began looking around for a cab. And that was my first mistake. 2 bulky forms slid in behind me, and we walked Indian file for a few steps. When we reached the alley, I turned around to see who it might be. Ooh! That was my second mistake. I didn't have time to make any more.
All right, Rennie. Drag him down this alley. Now, prop him up against the wall. I hope we don't chip none of these bricks with his head. Hey, Diamond. I know it's hard for you to see right now, but can you hear me?
You've got a lot of punch in that delivery.
Do you get it?
If I didn't get it before, I just got it then.
Yeah, I just got one thing to say. Mind your own business. Mind your own business. Mind your own business. Mind your own business.
Went out of business about 2 punches later. And a nice age later, a yellow cat with 1 bad eye began licking my face. I guess he thought I was something left over from Toots Shores. When I dissolved back in, I was lying on a soft white bed in police emergency hospital. Lieutenant Walt Levinson was leaning over me. He looked sad and puzzled, like he was trying to pick a lock with a wet hair.
Rick. Rick, it's me.
Oh, I can hear you, Walt. You've got a mouthful of firecrackers.
One of the radio cars found you lying in an alley. What happened?
Well, that's a bright question. Will I even rate a little sympathy?
Why should you? 9 times out of 10, you ask for it.
And get it. Now, look, Walt, there's a There's an irritated tone in your voice that isn't on the scale. Ask somebody to give me my pants, will you?
You can't walk out of here in your condition.
I got work to do. My client still has a bad name.
Yeah, it's even worse now.
You know, besides being overconfident, you're overconfident.
Rick, that body with the dum-dum's been identified. His name's Sam Gulliver, Treasury agent.
Treasury agent?
Yeah, he'd been after your client for a couple of months for passing bad money. Looks like he moved in to make the pinch and she shot him.
Bad money? Bad money? Oh, Walt, what time is it?
11:45. Why?
Well, I guess I'm 15 minutes away from being out of business. I used her dough to renew my license fee.
Well, I'd pay it for you myself if you could tell me who she'd been working with.
Dig, Walt. I know a gray house in Brooklyn that just reeks of printer's ink. And I know a guy named Joe Riley who's probably got some skin knuckles.
Oh?
Well, do I get my pants now? I filled Walt in with some of the details on our way over there. He took it pretty hard. But the thought of talking to a live suspect thrilled him. I knew it would. We slipped down the alley and back at the place and cut her lights. The house was dark and quiet. No one stopped us when we let ourselves in the basement door. The smell of printer's ink was still strong.
Throw the flash over there against that wall, Rick.
Hey. A whole basement full of evidence. Plates, prints, machinery.
You hit it, Rick. Now all we need is Riley.
Just above us, the whole world began to explode. I took the stairs three at a time, Walt right behind me. We ran to the front of the house, and from the window we saw a long, low convertible that looked familiar, streaking from the curb. I was making a lunge through the doorway when I tripped over a former acquaintance.
Hi. Hi, nosy. How's tricks?
Riley.
You must be made out of rubber. I thought I bounced you for at least 20 hours so we could get...
I'll get an ambulance, Rick.
No hurry, Walt. He wouldn't know the difference.
I better get a pickup out on that car we just saw pull away.
I bet I find it before you do.
Huh?
You got a corpse here, Walt. Let me have my fun. I used the cab to get back over to 63rd Street. The same kind of expensive cars were still parked out in front. Only one of them, a long, low convertible, had a very hot radiator.
Oh, it's you.
Tell me how tall I am, Kitty.
Well, I'd love to, but not right now.
I was kind of hoping we could have a drink. Got any hemlock?
I said later. I'm really tired.
I said now.
Well, you are eager. What do you want?
A poor, dumb kid who knew she'd been used asked me to help her this morning. Just before she dropped dead. And I'm helping her.
I just happen to be fresh out of medals.
You shot Joe Riley less than half an hour ago. Now, don't reach for it, lady. I'd like a good excuse.
Let me go.
Doris Romano didn't know she was passing bad money for you and your boyfriend, Riley. When the agent tried to make the arrest, either you or Riley shot him. And then Doris knew the whole setup. And you knew she was scared.
Joe Riley poisoned her. I didn't do it. I didn't want him to do it, and he was dumb enough to think it was clever to plant the gun in her purse.
But you didn't kill Riley for being so dumb. You had a better reason, Kitty. I talked to a coal shoveler in a basement this morning. He was bitter about both his daughters going wrong. One of them was Doris. The other was you. Those black eyes give you away right now.
All right. Look, I have a lot of money. Real money. Good money. Enough for two of us. We could do anything, go anywhere. Be your chance to stop gumshoeing around and be somebody. And, Ricky, you know how I am. I can be nice. Awful nice.
That's what scares me, Kitty.
Now, listen to me. They'll send me to prison. I'll grow old and ugly there.
If you're lucky.
Oh, Rick, please. Please let me go. I'll give you all the money. I'll do anything. Please. Please help me.
You know, lady, for a minute, you sounded just like your sister.
And another adventure with Richard Diamond, Private Eye. I believe Blake Edwards wrote it. I think you could recognize Sheldon Leonard as the hood who got shot there. He later went on to produce, I believe, the Dick Van Dyke Show and I Spy and a bunch of other stuff like that. He was like, you know, like third hood from the right there, and the most almost every movie in L.A., except for maybe Mark Davis or something like that. This is Ben Fortunato for Gremlin Time. I think we got time to squeeze in one more song here before the Tiki Cha-Cha Club. I'd like to thank you for listening. Yeah, Damon Runyon stories, it's you can find them at the library. There's like some great collections. They're all really good to read. And I got this collection of Richard Diamond stuff also at the Multnomah County Library. So you want to hear some more, you can find them there. Next month's Halloween, so I'm looking around for a nice scary story for next time on Gremlin Time. So long. See you next month.
Shining through the tree. Don't the moon look lonesome shining through the tree? Don't your house look lonesome when your baby back up to leave? Sent for you yesterday and here you come today. Sent for you yesterday and here you come today. You can't love me, baby, and treat me that way. We'll be right back. coming. Raise your window high. When you see me coming, raise your window high. When you see me passing, baby, see what tomorrow brings.
The Tiki Cha-Cha Club.
I guess it's t-